is the Shelbourne Knee Center podcast. This is Dr. Benner. I'm here with my co-host, Scott Bauman. And tonight we're going to be talking about outcomes based on meniscus treatment. This one was recently an e-poster at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons annual meeting in San Francisco, and will also be featured at the AOSSM meeting, the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine meeting this coming summer. And it's entitled Incidence of Graft Tear Based on Meniscus Treatment During Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction. Authors on that are Scott and myself, along with Sarah Eaton from our office and Dr. Shelbourne as well. All the work was performed at Shelbourne Knee Center in Indianapolis. If you'd like to check out our podcast more frequently, make sure to hit the like or subscribe button so you don't miss any of our content. If you do like what you hear, leave us a 5-star review. We would love that as well. And check out our previous episodes. We've got a lot of content down our already, about 30 episodes talking about knee topics. And if you want to contact us, you can contact us via email at the skcpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at the skcpodcast. And we're also available on all your podcast platforms.
Speaking of previous episodes, if you can go back to last week, we had a great discussion, another sports medicine topic. We talked about the treatment of ACL, MCL injuries, specifically what to do with the MCL when the ACL and MCL are both torn. And we had that project that was a platform presentation at the combined section meeting for the APTA, as well as the upcoming AOSSM meeting. So go back to last week and listen to that other great discussion we had on that sports medicine topic.
Scott, let's dive right in on this topic. There's been a lot of discussion about meniscus treatment at the time of ACL reconstruction, really over the last several years. It seems to continue to evolve over time. It's interesting when we talk to Dr. Shelbourne, you and I have heard him talk about this on many occasions, how he kind of went through some phases during his career where early on in his career, you know, when he was in residency, the meniscus was taken out without much regard for its function in the future because we didn't have good methods of fixing ACL tears. And the thought at the time was, well, if we can just get the meniscus better, then things will be okay. Over time, obviously, that was shown to not be the case. And the pendulum swung widely in the other direction to let's do things arthroscopically and take out as little meniscus as possible. And then there was a big rush towards repairing meniscus tears. He started repairing a lot of meniscus tears in the 80s and 90s and then did a lot of work further on from that on which tears were the best ones to treat at the time of surgery to try to keep the meniscus, and which ones were better treated with partial meniscectomy. That's a discussion for another day. A lot of good content from Dr. Shelbourne's past on that topic. But now there's a lot of topic in addition to meniscus repairs about what the impact is on the ACL graft itself, depending on what we do with the meniscus. And there's some thought that meniscus tears repairs that don't heal or tears that have to be taken out at the time of ACL surgery could potentially negatively impact graft tear rates. So let's jump right in from there, Scott. This study was based on some introductory evidence which showed that there might be higher failure rates among ACL tears later after surgery, depending on meniscus status. So we decided to look into this on our own, and let's talk about the methods of this study, how we got at this project.
So for the methods here, we took the patients from our database, and we had 4,148 patients that had a primary ACL reconstruction, and that was with an ipsilateral or contralateral patellar tendon grafts. And as a lot of the loyal listeners will know, at our office, we specifically use contralateral primary grafts. However, for this particular study, we took both the ipsilateral and contralateral patellar tendon graft patients. From an exclusion standpoint, we did want to exclude any other ligamentous injuries like lateral sides, MCLs, PCLs, anything that would contribute to different stability or potentially contribute to different postoperative stability, since that was one of the main outcomes that we wanted to look at. We wanted to really control for that confounding variable. So we excluded everybody that had any type of other ligament injury besides the ACL injury. We also excluded patients that had a knee arthroscopy within 2 years of their ACL reconstruction, again, just to potentially hit those confounding variables if there was anything that was going to factor in or cause various stability deficits or whatnot after surgery. We wanted to control for that, so trying to get a clean data set with those exclusions. And then with those exclusion and inclusion criteria, we came up with those 4,148 patients. And from there, as you had mentioned, we wanted to see what the effect of meniscus treatment was on postoperative outcomes. And in order to determine those meniscus treatments, we had to find what type of group they were going to be in based on that treatment status. So we took those 4,000 patients and we divided them into seven groups. Our control group were those that did not have any meniscus tears, so normal menisci, both medial and lateral. And then from the six treatment groups, we had partial medial meniscectomy, as well as partial lateral meniscectomy, and then a partial bilateral meniscectomy. So medial, lateral, bilateral meniscectomies were three of the groups. And then the other three groups were the medial, lateral, and bilateral, whether the meniscus was left alone and thought to heal on its own, or it was repaired to have that healed. So it was seven groups, control group, along with the meniscectomy, and leave and repair group for both the medial, lateral, or bilateral meniscectomy or leave and repair. So an important thing to note with these seven groups, all the patients, whether they were in group one, perioperative rehab program, so both before surgery as well as postoperatively, they were following similar protocols. And again, go back to listen to some previous episodes on our rehab after ACL reconstructions to see what the exact protocol was. But for those that have listened before, we're really focused on the accelerated rehab program, which includes hyperextension equal to the other side, progressing flexion within the first couple months, and then progressing strength, again, whether that be ipsilateral or contralateral. But the important thing to know with this study was that all seven groups had the same exact rehab both before and after surgery. And then from an outcome standpoint, we really looked at two main outcomes. We wanted to look at ACL graft tears within 2 years from surgery. And we chose 2 years for this particular study just from the literature that shows that you're going to be more statistically likely to tear within those first 2 years. So we wanted to capture that rate within those first 2 years, as well as a stability measure, and we measured that with the KT1000, and we used the manual maximum difference from side to side, and we used that at the 2 month time point, as we have shown that the KT test really doesn't change from 2 months to 6 months to 1 year. So we chose that 2 month time point just to try to capture more patients.
When we talk about these relieve or repair groups, Scott, is what we called these ones that did not have the meniscus taken out, but did have a tear. So I think it's important to know for our listeners what we mean by that. We're talking specifically about people who have stable tears that are found at the time of surgery, almost incidentally. Most of these patients aren't having specific symptoms from their meniscus tear, and that they're not having locking, catching, mechanical symptoms, or joint line pain any more than any other patient who has ACL reconstruction, who's having an ACL reconstruction. We've shown that previously in both the acute and subacute and the chronic situations, that joint line tenderness is not really a reliable marker for meniscus tears in ACL injured knees. So these meniscus tears are really asymptomatic, but they're found at the time of surgery. We've had a couple different studies showing that peripheral, non-degenerative, non-displaceable vertical tears of both the medial and lateral menisci can heal with leaving them alone. Now, a lot of people are going to say, why don't you repair these? In reality, we do believe we're stimulating these to heal by doing trepanation. So when we find these type of tears, again, peripheral, vertical, non-degenerative, non-displaceable meniscus tears that are in a place where they're likely to heal, we treat these with meniscal trepanation. We take a long meniscus repair cannula, we take a long meniscus repair needle through it, and then we trepanate the meniscus on both its superior and inferior surfaces all the way from the posterior extent up to the anterior extent. Just make a lot of holes from the central portion of the meniscus through the, we poke it through the meniscus, through the tear, and into the vascular periphery of the meniscus, with the hope that we can stimulate some healing by doing that. And it's a little outside the scope of this study, but we do have studies previously on both the medial and lateral side for meniscus tears of that type at the time of ACL reconstruction, that they can heal and function well, even in the long term, without any detrimental effects. But the question with this study in particular was about stability and damage to the graft, with the thought being that stability is worse if you've had a partial medial or lateral or both meniscectomy, and that if you leave a meniscus tear to heal on its own or repair it, that you could potentially restore stability back to normal. But in our case, where we're not repairing a lot of these with suture, there would be concern by others that that could lead to increased stresses on the graft, potentially increases in graft failure and re-tear rates. So that's really what we're going at with this study, is look at those different meniscus tear groups that we've treated with our methods, and then look at the stability parameters that we can measure, as well as whether or not the patients go on to tear their ACL again. So Scott, why don't you recount the results we were able to get from this analysis?
Well, with one of the main outcomes being graft re-tear rates by group, we want to look at the rate of which they were re-tearing those grafts. And when you look at the entire population, the 4,000 plus patients in this cohort, we found a mean of 3.2% for those re-tearing their grafts. The control group was re-tearing at a rate of 3.4%, and that was actually second to highest in the group. And I guess I should start first and foremost to let people know that there was no statistical significant difference in re-tear rate between the seven groups, with the highest rate being the group that was the lateral leave or repair group at 4%, and the lowest group was the partial bilateral meniscectomy group at 2.3%, and anywhere between 4 and 2.3, the other five groups fell, with, again, that control group being 3.4 and the cohort mean overall being 3.2%. The other outcome that we wanted to look at was postoperative stability measured with the KT arthrometer. With this one, we did find a statistical significant difference in the manual maximum difference between the two knees between the seven groups. The group that had the smallest difference side to side was the control group, those that did not have any meniscus tears, as well as the medial leave and repair group. And those had a difference of 1.6 millimeters. And the two groups that had the highest, the one that had the absolute highest, was the bilateral meniscectomy groups. And that was a difference of 2.4 millimeters. And then the medial meniscectomy group was also was the second highest difference at 2.0 millimeters. And in a post hoc analysis to determine where those differences existed, we determined that the group that had the medial meniscectomy as well as the bilateral meniscectomies, they had statistically significantly higher KT differences compared to the control group, or the group that had no meniscus tears.
So from a graft tear standpoint, really found no difference, which I think is, of course, the thing that people are most worried about. If I don't get the meniscus healing exactly right, am I going to cause a difference in stability, and am I going to cause more graft tears? I think we can say pretty definitively there was no difference statistically, and with all those percentages being right in line with one another, I don't think you could even argue that there's, oh, maybe it's not statistically significant, but is it clinically significantly different? Absolutely not. But when you look at those seven different groups, there is a statistical difference in the KT test, but not in the, but I don't think functionally anybody's going to argue that those patients have about, you know, half a millimeter difference in their average KT values. If it doesn't lead to further graft tears or failures, then I think that's probably clinically insignificant. So I think, you know, as we discuss what we can learn from this study, I don't think us or anybody else has ever argued that people with meniscus tears don't have a little bit looser knees when it comes to their stability testing. I think that's been shown pretty clearly, not just by us, but by other authors as well, that people who've had a prior meniscectomy do tend to have a little bit more laxity side to side compared to the normal knee. However, it does not seem to be clinically relevant, as the side to side differences are very small and the graft tear rates are no different. Scott, what do you think are some particular strengths and weaknesses of this paper as we try to put it into context with what else is out there in the literature?
Well, I think one of the first strengths that comes to my mind is just the high volume of patients, with a cohort of over 4,148 patients. And when you break those 4,148 patients down, we had a pretty good distribution of patients with the other six groups, with you know, the smallest group still having well over 200 patients in it for a total number. So having the high numbers overall, I think, was definitely one of the biggest strengths of this study, as well as having everybody follow the same rehab protocol. You know, there's a lot of papers out there that looks at trying to assess graft tear rate or postoperative stability, and you really have to keep in the back of your mind what the rehab protocol was like or what the surgical technique was like. And in our hands, we have the same surgical technique with the consistent graft choice, as well as consistent preoperative and postoperative rehab. So in our hands with a study like this, we feel like that we can really nail down these variables and try to see exactly what is causing or showing to have no difference from an outcome standpoint. And from a weakness standpoint, I really think that that is more in the surgical details. You know, when we talk about having groups that had a medial lateral or part or a bilateral meniscectomy, we don't really quantify the percentage of meniscus that was taken for that meniscectomy. So we really can't factor in whether or not that had anything to do with these results. And same for the leave and repairs. There was not any surgical details in terms of what that tear may have looked like or what the repair technique was. So the surgical information or the lack of surgical information besides just the group that they were in, I believe, is one of the weaknesses of this study.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you'll find a small radial tear of the lateral meniscus that's only a few millimeters. You nibble that out and you do log it as a partial meniscectomy because that's what it is. But, you know, that versus somebody has a stuck bucket that's split in half and flared into the posterior, you know, half of it flared out the back of the knee, the other of it in the inframeniscal space that's not repairable, that you end up with very little meniscus left on the lateral side of the knee. Those are going to have markedly different impacts on what the ultimate stability is. But I think a trend really holds that, of course, the more meniscus you take out, the more instability that there's potential for. But I think the trends are still noteworthy, even though there are some limitations that we definitely acknowledge.
So as we get close to wrapping up here, I do want to kind of throw a question back to you from a clinical relevance standpoint. When you look at the results of this study, when you're deciding what surgery to perform and what the meniscus looks like and how to handle that intraoperatively or preoperatively, does this study affect how you're making those decisions at all?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as some of these studies came out that were looking at the impact of meniscus treatment on graft failures and stability, we, of course, and it's the whole reason we did this study was to try to put it to the test with our own data. And I think specifically for us, because we use patella tendon grafts all the time, we feel really good about the stability that we're able to achieve and the lack of graft failures that we're able to achieve with patella tendon grafts. I know there's been a lot of discussion at the last several meetings I've been to over hamstring grafts and how to decrease failure rates with hamstrings in particular. And I wonder whether, and I guess I don't have any data, definitely not presented in this study, but in others, whether this phenomenon of worsening stability and larger graft failure rates is more related to hamstring grafts. I guess I'll have to go back and look that up. And I would encourage everybody listening as well to make sure you put these results about graft retail rates and failure rates in the proper context of which graft was used. That's a discussion for another day and why we believe patella tendon grafts are the right ones. But in particular, these things with stability seem to be not as big of a problem with patella tendon grafts. So that's one thing I would say, to always put these into context. You know, I have the benefit of Dr. Shelbourne's experience and knowing his experience with meniscus tears over time, and those really inform a lot of my decisions. And I've been fortunate enough now, 12 years into practice, to be able to see it play out in the way that the studies say that it should play out. When I go in for ACL surgery, my surgical decision making is, how can I try to save the meniscus if at all possible, but do so in a way that does not alter our rehabilitation at all. And with the tears that you usually see at the time of ACL reconstruction, I've been able to learn that a lot of those will heal without treatment or with limited treatment like trephination that doesn't change our range of motion recommendations, doesn't change our rehabilitation. And with that in mind, I feel like I'm able to have a little bit better of an idea of what to do with these and feel more comfortable with the outcomes. So I would say, one being patella tendon grafts, using those all the time really makes a difference, and having the ability to look back at the experience and see how it connects with my practice is important as well.
Well, thanks for adding that insight. I think this was a great project that showed some interesting results and really I think moves some of the literature forward on this topic. So I appreciate the discussion on this very topic. As always, if you want to get a hold of us, you can hit us up on our Twitter and Instagram at the SKC Podcast. You can visit our YouTube or Facebook SKC Podcast pages, or email us at the SKC Podcast at gmail.com. And we will talk to you next week.